Welcome to Federal Insights for September, the future of work, sponsored by Box.
NASA has spent 50 years sending people out of Earth's gravitational field. Now it's sent nearly all of its own employees home to telework. You know why. For how this phenomenon has changed how NASA works and thinks about work, I spoke with the Associate Administrator, Steve Jerzyk.
For a little context, we put a decision-making framework in place back in March. And it has stages in it. And so that has allowed us to have each center and each location look at their situation from a COVID-19 standpoint, as well as a work standpoint, and make decisions that protect the health and safety of the workforce while keeping the mission moving forward. So we had many centers and locations in what we call stage four, which is mandatory teleworking, and the only people on site are to support our mission essential functions. And our mission essential functions are keeping our missions in space operating, everything from the ISS to our robotic missions and the supporting functions and infrastructure to do that. So we never shut down, obviously, the ISS, the National Space Station, or any of our missions that are in space and kept those operating and kept our mission operations communications infrastructure in place. So that, back since March, moving forward. Now we've moved to what we're calling stage three, which is the mission essential functions, but also mission critical programs and projects. Things like James Webb Space Telescope and, continuing with our commercial crew activities, we kept the Mars Perseverance program moving forward with a lot of on-site work, particularly at Kennedy Space Center. So where we are now is every center and location is in this stage three, with probably 75 to 80% of our people teleworking and remotely, with 20 or so percent of our workforce that would have been on the center before COVID on the centers now. And that 20% includes both civil servants and on-site contractors. So we have a pretty large on-site contractor workforce.
Sure. Well, I guess if I was on the International Space Station in stage four, it would be nice to know. I'm sure they were glad to know that if they picked up the phone, somebody was down there to answer it.
Absolutely. Yeah, we had our mission operations center down at Johnson Space Center still up and running, but we took precautions with social distancing and plexiglass barriers and rotating shifts and enhanced cleaning, controlling access, mask wearing, right? All of that to make sure we, kept our mission operators in Houston healthy and keep our astronauts healthy as well.
You had a commercial launch under the auspices of NASA to the space station and a return of other astronauts through all of this. And how did that all work? Because it was a huge success.
Yeah, so it was. I can't thank the NASA team and the SpaceX team enough for the success of what we call the SpaceX Demo 2 mission, which was a crew demonstration mission, test mission, following on an uncrewed mission that we had last year. So, Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley were our two test pilots for that mission. And we did most of the reviews, engineering reviews and program reviews virtually leading up to that launch in end of May. However, we really felt like the final reviews, the flight readiness and launch readiness, we really needed to do those face-to-face down at the Kennedy Space Center. So we, a small group of leaders and program folks traveled to Kennedy. We set up the room so we could social distance, and we were wearing masks when we were moving around. So we did it safely, and that worked. And we did the flight readiness review, which I chaired, and the launch readiness review that led up to a very successful launch in orbit operations and docking with the space station in May. So I was down at Kennedy for the launch, and I was at the Johnson Space Center Mission Control for docking and got to talk to Bob and Doug after they got on the ISS. And then in August, early August, on the first day that we were planning to bring Doug and Bob back, we were able to because the weather cooperated. Oddly enough, there was a hurricane off the east coast of Florida But off the west coast of Florida in the Gulf, the weather was perfect. 1 foot or less waves in the Gulf, winds below 5 knots, and it was perfect condition to land Bob and Doug back, and we got them back safely and back to the Johnson Space Center the very next day. So, and they're doing very well. So, very successful mission to the station. Bob helped the crew, Chris Cassidy and the Russian crewmates. They did several spacewalks to do some maintenance on the station, install new batteries during their 2 months there, and
sure,
safely came home in August.
And just a question, a couple of questions come to mind here. First of all, the review meetings that you discussed, and there's before and after the fact types of meetings that were in person, correct?
Yes, the final review, yes.
And do those meetings tend to be intense? People like being really frank about what went right and what might have been a challenge during these different stages of the mission?
Yes, they do. They can be intense, and we want them to be intense. We want people to ask all the questions, and we want to look at all the data to make sure that we've mitigated all the risks that we need to mitigate, and we've accepted the ones that we can and should accept, and we're ready to go fly. So I think we had a really good 2-day discussion about where we were with the program, what the risks were, and whether we were able to accept the residual risk, because there's always risk when we go fly astronauts or our robotic missions or even our aircraft test flights. And then at the end, I do a poll, and I poll our international partners, our leadership across the agency, and make sure everybody is in agreement that we're ready to go fly. And that's what we did in that flight readiness route at the end of May.
And those meetings were people sitting far apart at the tables and masks on and so forth?
Correct. We were, our rules were, we were in a very large room in a building at Kennedy Space Center. So we were able to have the seats 6 feet apart around the table and around the room. Which was a little strange, but it worked. So while you were sitting down and participating, you could take your mask off and communicate. But anytime you got up and moved around at all within the facility and building, you had to have a mask on. So as long as you can guarantee that 6 feet of separation while you're seated, fine. But any other time, you have your mask on.
And make sure you sneeze into your elbow.
Correct, yes. And lots of hand sanitizer. Lots of hand washing and hand sanitizer.
Steve Jerzyk is Associate Administrator of NASA. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
You have a file. Maybe it's a customer contract, a budget spreadsheet, or a video that tells your story. But this file is so much more than meets the eye. In fact, this single piece of content, a container for your most important data, holds the key to your success. This content can either help you solve your customers' problems, or if you ignore it, hold you back. We're here to help. Box. Simplify how you work. Find out more at box.com.
Welcome back to our interview with Steve Jerzyk, Associate Administrator of NASA. Our topic is the changing nature of work. And my other question is about the mission control aspect. The classic picture of NASA is all the people in the room looking at their screens, cheek by jowl, pretty much. And in fact, even SpaceX's operations mimic that. That's just the way space is expected to be. Can all of these systems in the latter-day era now be monitored remotely? That is to say, you don't have to be in the mission control screens because of the changes in technology since the 60s.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We have the folks that are the operators in mission control, right? And that have these defined positions that need to be able to monitor data in real time and react in real time. But we have a whole set of other rooms for other operations support and engineering support, both at the Johnson Space Center, as well as in Hawthorne, California for SpaceX. And so we definitely set up to be able to have more people be able to access the data and communicate in remote locations, either at the same facility or across the country. And then even the training, we were able to set up The ability to do more astronaut training through simulations, real-time simulations, at the Johnson Space Center, and limit the amount of travel they had to do to California to SpaceX facilities to get into their simulators and do that training. So we even set up a more remote and virtual training environment to limit travel and limit the exposure of crew to people.
And on the mission control aspect, so if I'm hearing you correctly, this is not something people can do, say, from their home laptops, but they can do it from maybe empty offices in a NASA facility on those computers.
Yeah, it'd be a little challenging to do it from home with some of the network challenges and security challenges, although it's possible. But yeah, we've set up kind of dedicated rooms that sort of look like mission control with the screens, right? And that people would have the headsets on and be in front of monitors. And then, of course, they can also monitor the situation back in their offices.
So I liken the situation to, say, an airport where, you know, say in Dallas-Fort Worth, there's probably, I don't know, 2,000 stations for people to check in. You can log on to any terminal there and get to a specific flight. And regardless of what the gate actually is, that's that general idea.
Yeah, that general idea, and, you know, depending on your role and expertise, you want to look at specific data, either in real time or pull it up from an archive. And so each person has the ability to do that at their station and with their IT systems. So it's really important that based on your role, you have the access to the data that you need to look at to participate in the operations.
And understanding that you're not the CIO of NASA, but can you give us just a basic picture of the technological underpinnings for this capability?
Yeah, so the first thing is a network that is secure, right? And so we really looked at isolating and securing our network for mission systems, including mission operations, and having the ability to continuously monitor that network to make sure that there's no one's on it, there's no traffic on it that's unexpected. So the network has been really critical. The other thing we did leading up to launch is for not only the mission systems and networks, but even on the corporate side, we froze all software updates and configuration changes. We did not want to take the risk of updating software and having problems or updating the configuration of systems or networks and having issues leading up to the launch. So we kind of froze the configuration and made sure that we had a stable and secure set of IT systems to support the launch and launches in general. We'll do that moving forward. We also increased our visibility into what was going on at our Security Operations Center, which monitors the systems and networks across all of NASA. And we worked with our SpaceX colleagues also to make sure they had their Security Operations Center, you know, fully staffed and up and running. And we were monitoring things to make sure there were no cybersecurity issues or no security issues. So all that's really important to make sure that all the IT is in place, it's all stable and it's all secure and functioning to support the Demo 2 launch as well as, you know, other critical launches and activities.
Steve Jerzyk is Associate Administrator of NASA. We'll return with the third and final segment of this interview after a short break. I'm Tom Temin.
You have a file. Maybe it's a customer contract, a budget spreadsheet, or a video that tells your story. But this file is so much more than meets the eye. In fact, this single piece of content, a container for your most important data, holds the key to your success. This content can either help you solve your customers' problems, or if you ignore it, hold you back. We're here to help. Box. Simplify how you work. Find out more at box.com.
Welcome back to our third and final segment of our interview with Steve Jerzyk, the Associate Administrator of NASA, on the topic of how the nature of work is changing in federal agencies. And moving beyond the operational level, NASA as a contracting agency and as an agency that employs many scientists and engineers that go to public meetings or did, describe how that has changed. Are in the field of space exploration and space engineering and so on, I guess for that matter, NASA does work at the lower levels of the atmosphere, too. Have the meetings mostly disappeared? Are they mostly happening virtually? What's going on there?
Yeah, so, you know, our one of our missions as part of SpaceX is to disseminate our research, technology, and mission information as widely as possible. We do that through a lot of conferences and meetings, and those have all gone virtual, 100% virtual. So we've had, you know, we participated in many industry conferences, many meetings to engage our industry partners in developing acquisition and procurement strategy, and et cetera, all virtually. We expect that to continue to some period of time, and then maybe in the future it might go to a hybrid of, you know, some people need and want to be there in person to present and to network and to meet, but there'll be a good percentage of people in conferences and meetings that will participate remotely. And we'll have to figure out how to make that happen in an effective way so that it's effective for both the in-person attendees and the virtual attendees. Then on the industry and procurement side, we've been able to keep our procurements and solicitations moving forward and not have COVID delay things significantly. So that's really important for keeping our programs in progress on schedule as the best we can. However, it's been a real challenge for the program project community as well as the procurement community because there's been extra activities, obviously, and work to deal with COVID and respond to COVID, as well as do the normal procurement and industry and academia activities that we've had to that we have to do to just the mission, keep the programs moving forward.
Sure. And just a quick question on the cybersecurity question. As an agency that has challenges in the past with cybersecurity, there's a new element or urgency in all of this pandemic because of the scattered nature of work. What are some of the measures there that you've taken to make sure that the phishing attacks don't get through, et cetera?
Yeah, so one is training and awareness of the workforce, right? Because the best line of defense, particularly in phishing, is awareness and do not open that email, do not click on that link, do not provide that information. So we've definitely enhanced awareness and training for sure, in addition to our regular training there. So that's the first thing. Behavior of people and awareness of people is really a key. The other thing is we've really limited the number of tools and software packages that people were allowing people to use. We've tried to enhance the capabilities of the ones that are the standard software that we want people to use to collaborate and share files, et cetera. But we know some software is more secure than others. And so we've tried to limit use of software that we know we've reviewed and we know is secure and prohibit the use of software that we know is less secure, and that helps people collaborate more effectively, reduces cost, as well as reduces risk. So, and then like I said, the security of our network is really critical, and so we've continued to enhance our ability to continuously monitor networks and activity on networks across all of the networks within NASA, whether associated with their corporate networks associated with running the agency, or the networks that are specific to programs and missions. So there'll be more work to do there.
And just wrapping all of this up, there's been a lot of change in procedures, a lot of change in, I guess, learnings. Is NASA collecting all of the information that you've learned in some manner? And do you think that there will be permanent ways in the ways people work now as we get out of the pandemic, and people, at least in some cases, have found working remote can be just as effective as going into the office or the lab?
Yeah, that's correct. And I think a lot of people have been really productive working remotely. And there are challenges with it, but I think we've really been pleasantly surprised at the amount of progress we've been able to make on our missions. We are capturing data on both the percentage of workforce working remotely and on site on any given day, week, and month. And so, and we're measuring productivity in the the way in which we've been able to meet our schedules for our programs and projects and procurements and things. So, you know, we plan everything out. It has a well-defined schedule with milestones. And so we're looking at now that we're for the missions where we started the work on site as well as remotely, how are we doing and being productive? So that data that we have been collecting, we'll be collecting. And then we're starting to think about what the post-COVID new world looks like. We totally convinced it will be a new world, and looking at how we maintain, how do we maintain the dedication to the mission, the teamwork, the job satisfaction of our people, while maybe more people are working remotely. We have this more of a hybrid situation with people working on site and people working remotely, and even people working from anywhere, people working, say, for the Ames Research Center in California, but living in Colorado and really, really working remotely, right? So we want to take advantage of that and the advantages of the flexibility it gives people and the ability to maybe recruit and retain people in a more effective way, but also stay the best place to work in the federal government, have our engagement of our employees be high, our satisfaction of our employees be high, our dedication to the mission of our employees continue. So that'll be something we'll be looking at. What have we learned in COVID, and how can we do that moving forward?
Yeah, that touched on one more question I actually had, and that is, do you have ways, or are you monitoring employee, not just satisfaction and engagement, but that people are okay, so that, one, that they are okay, and second, that NASA can preserve that perch at the top of the best places to work that it's enjoyed for year after year?
Yeah, the key to making sure our folks are looked after and cared for are our first-line supervisors, you know, whether the branch heads and engineering organizations or the office leads in our human capital procurement organization. So they have used the virtual tools, right, to check in with people one-on-one, to have all-hands meetings, with their team, and even to socialize remotely, right, with the team. And we're giving our supervisors training in how to use the tools, how to look out for your people, how to engage your people in this virtual world right now, where you're not able to, meet with each other face to face, bump into each other in the hallway, and have hallway conversations, et cetera. So I think the agency has done a really good job in communicating with.
Steve Jerzyk is the associate administrator of NASA. To hear this interview in its entirety or to share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for September, the future of work, sponsored by Box on Federal News Network.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
The Library of Congress Veterans History Project is home to more than 100,000 stories of those who have served our nation. It's a treasure filled with the thoughts and emotions of the people who were on the front lines of history. You too can make history. Interview the veteran in your life and or submit original photos and documents. VHP has the materials you need to provide an accurate and personal view of history. Please visit www.loc.gov/vets for more information. The Veterans History Project. It's the story of our lives.